You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
What was the impact of 9/11 on student politics in Canada? How do young activists relate to the experiences of their parents' generation? Is a manifesto a more or less effective communication form than a press release when undertaking direct action? These and many similar questions could be focal points for a political commentary, but could they be elements of a novel? David Bernan has made them elements of his first novel, titled North of 9/11. This novel takes place in Montreal, particularly in and around Concordia University, in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, in the context of the current so-called War on Terror. David Bernan is, in addition to an author, a researcher and translator, and an activist. He lives currently and works in Quebec City, but we contacted him this morning, 300 kilometers from there, in Trois-Pistoles, Quebec. Good morning, David, and welcome to Red Eye.
Good morning.
Congratulations on your novel, North of 9/11. I found it very gripping. I'm wondering, why did you decide to make a novel of these events and not write a political essay?
Well, I think a novel is a way that you can reach people that you couldn't normally reach with a political essay. I mean, I think I know generally the people who will read what I write in on Rabble or even if I manage to get a piece into the Montreal Gazette or whatnot. But it'll be a very short piece. I know the kind of people that will read that, but I think I can reach a different audience with a novel, and also you can give a lot more background with a novel than you can in more political writings.
You launched your book just a couple of months ago at Concordia College, which features centrally as the setting in this novel. Two activists who are banned from the campus that you wanted to be at the launch had to speak on the street outside the launch site, which was the Simone de Beauvoir Institute at Concordia. But at least you were in the inside, at least at the book launch. Now I gather you want to do a reading from the novel at Concordia on September 11th to mark the fifth anniversary of 9/11. But this time Concordia gave you a different response. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I just filled out the proper forms this past June to try to book a classroom for September 11th to do a reading, set of readings from the novel, and I had about a month and a half later, which is I guess standard for room bookings because of all of the security checks that they have to do now. I received the green light from security. They said it had been approved by security. I got that email about a month and a half after I filed the request, and then just after the weekend after that, 3 days later, I received another email saying that the request had been denied. And so I asked them, well, which email is right? Is it approved or is it denied? And they said, oh, the approval was a mistake, and that the Risk Assessment Committee had come to the conclusion that it was too dangerous to have this reading of a novel about 9/11 on September 11th in a classroom at Concordia University, so therefore the event could not take place. So right now I'm in a position where I have I had to go to McGill and work with the QPIRG at McGill, the Public Interest Research Group there, to book an event as part of their September 11th memorial activities, which they were happy to do. But it's really unfortunate that this kind of thing can't happen at Concordia.
The name intrigues me. The Risk Assessment Committee sounds very much like a kind of CSIS agency or RCMP or Montreal QPP or something like that.
Yeah, it's actually difficult to find any information. There's nothing on the Concordia website about this. Actually, it's called, I think, a Risk Assessment Team. That's what they called it in the email that they sent it to me. But there's no policies or anything around it that are at least publicly available. And so one of the things I've done is I've done an access to information request to try to get the documentation around this and to try to understand how they can decide who can speak and who can't speak. For instance, this past spring, Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!, a renowned journalist, was supposed to come and speak at Concordia, but they decided she couldn't speak at Concordia, that she was too controversial. So who decides? Well, I guess the risk assessment team decides, but we'd like to know who they are and what criteria they're using to decide who is controversial and who's not controversial. And why should anybody controversial not be allowed to speak anyway? Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing in a university, is to be challenged in the challenging the status quo, or at least listening to ideas that challenge the status quo?
Your novel, among other things, portrays tension between activists when faced with the pressure of the intensified repression that happened in Canada, as in many other countries, after 9/11. And there are numerous exchanges among activists about how to respond to this new situation. Were these conversations and arguments difficult for you to recreate?
No, I think they came pretty naturally. I mean, I had lived through so much of that. Their arguments were taking place, I think, leading up to the Quebec City mobilizations around the Summit of the Americas. People may remember that was about 6 months before 9/11. There were about 50,000 activists that came to Quebec City to tear down the wall separating people from the leaders that were negotiating this free trade area of the Americas. There were a lot of debates going on before that, and then the tone of the debate changed dramatically just a few months later with the terrorist attacks in New York, and all of a sudden we were in a completely different situation, and different tactics, I think, were called for. And I think that pretty much everybody, whatever their position was, I think realized that there was a need for new tactics in this new situation. But exactly what those tactics were was a topic of a lot of debate.
I was just going to comment that the conversations and discussions that you have in the novel certainly for me revive the times very, very, very accurately. The novel also intimately links members of the 60s generation of activists with young activists today. I'm wondering why you gave such importance to this intergenerational dialogue.
Well, it's something that actually doesn't happen enough. In a work of fiction, I'm allowed to make it happen as much as I want. But when it does happen, I think it's really illuminating for people, because a lot of young activists who have cut their teeth in the anti-globalization movement and now the anti-war movement have the idea that they're doing something completely new, and this war on terror is something that, I mean, it's reached a new level of intensity, but it's not something completely new. Capitalism and imperialism have existed for a long time, and there's a lot of people that have been struggling against this for a long time that we can learn a lot from. And so we have some of the characters in this in the novel who were involved at various times. Mordecai Dingelman, somebody who was involved with the Quebec-Palestine Solidarity Committee in the 80s, and Hassan Mohamed, who was involved in the 70s in Paris in various student movements, and who was also involved in the Quebec-Palestine Solidarity Committee with Mordecai in the in Montreal, a lot of and of course then there's the dialogue, and then there's also the arguments between Sarah Murphy and her father Jack Murphy, who do not see eye to eye at all, and who her father is from that 60s generation, but he has rejected all of the politics that he was immersed in as he was dodging the draft from the United States when he came to Montreal in the late 60s. So, and of course, there's we're looking at the history of of terrorism and counterterrorism, and however you define those terms, and it didn't start with the terrorist attacks in New York City on 9/11. There were all kinds of historical factors leading up to those events that it's important to understand. And so we have characters who were involved in who lived through the coup in Chile in 1973, which also started on September 11th, 1973, or the Sabra and Shatila massacres in southern Lebanon in the early 80s, which is really pertinent now to what's going on in Lebanon now. So if you're people can see that the stories of those events are put in contrast to the stories of the events surrounding the World Trade Center attack. So you see the massacres, the violence happening everywhere. And so, because at that time, the people kind of had this idea that this had happened all of a sudden out of the blue, and there were no historical precedents for it. And over the period of a couple months, all we saw on the television every day was the World Trade Center falling and the stars and stripes and people crying, and we lost all sense of proportion, historical proportion, I think, at that time.
You mentioned Sarah Murphy, and she's the central and in the end the tragic character in your novel, and she's a 19-year-old woman student. In most of the press reports around events of Concordia, the central figures were, as I got them from this distance of being in BC, were young males. Why did you choose to displace these the male sort of centrality with a female character in your novel?
Well, the males, it's true that I guess the press releases and a lot of the media attention is focused on certain male leaders, but when you look at who's involved in these in activist groups at Concordia, it is mostly women, and a lot of that I think has to do with the work that the Simone de Beauvoir Institute has done in attracting young women to the Women's Studies program at Concordia and in training them to be good activists and researchers and so on. So when I looked at the who I saw as being really involved in these in the anti-war politics and anti-racism politics at Concordia, the people that came to my mind were mostly white women, actually, and Arab, Muslim, Palestinian men. I don't know why the those two groups were. Well, I guess I have some ideas of why those two groups are so represented in the anti-war movement. But so I decided that those would be my central characters, using composites of actual people that I knew and I worked with at the time. I decided that those would be my central characters.
Lastly, I just want to ask you, I know every author wishes everyone would read their writing, and in particular novels, but is there any particular audience you hope will read North of 9/11?
Yeah, well, I'd like people like my grandmother to read North of 9/11, people who get a lot of their news from mainstream news sources like the National Post or the Globe and Mail and so on, who need to see the other side, who need to see what makes, and it doesn't, and I don't think it really comes through with like a left-wing political article that's 900 words or what. You need to get inside the heads of activists and see what they're thinking, what their passions are, what moves them, and how they interact with other people in order to understand that they're not terrorists. And I think and people that I have talked to, like my aunt and my grandmother, who've read the novel, I think they do appreciate that, and they have a better understanding of what people like me and my friends are about.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, David, and best wishes for reaching many audiences, including your grandmother.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with David Bernens. He's author of North of 9/11. We reached him in the small town of Trois-Pistoles in Quebec. North of 9/11 is published by Cumulus Press. Cumulus, as in the cloud, C-U-M-U-L-U-S. There are several Vancouver bookstores that carry Cumulus publications, so among others, you can ask for North of 9/11 at People's Co-op Bookstore on Commercial Drive and Spartacus Books on Hastings. Otherwise, check out the publisher's webpage at cumuluspress.com.